Hi, family. I'm Judith, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Judith.
And I thank God for being here. I'm real grateful to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous, and I'm real grateful that I am in the recovery process. When the committee chair member called me at the last minute, and I do mean the last minute, and asked me to, if I would share, you know, in this topic, recovery 5 to 9, immediately I thought that I can't do this because I really don't have enough time, you know, to do it. But for real, what I'm learning in recovery is that it's not about me, and it's not always me that is the one that's speaking. So I knew that I'd be able to do it, even though it was the last minute, without a lot of preparation, if you will, because I was able to just say, okay, God, here's the topic. Now you give me what you want me to have, and I'll turn around and I'll give it to the people that's here today. So that's what I'm going to do today. I'm going to give you the message of recovery, sharing my experience, strength, and hope. I am in my 5th year of recovery, and it's been a long, long, rocky road. I really have to, again, thank God for bringing me into the light because I was in the dark for so long. I have to thank God because if it weren't for him, I would be dead right now and wouldn't even be being able to be right in front of you today. I'm a girl who grew up in Philly. I'm a Philly girl. And I grew up, and before I really get into telling you a little bit about my past, I want to let you know, since this is a message of recovery, I'm not going to go into a big drug log, but it is necessary to share a little bit of something with you about where I came from and what I've gone through so that you can get to see just how great and mighty God is in my life and how great and mighty he is as he works through the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Narcotics Anonymous. Like I said, I grew up in Philly, and from an early age, I remember not really feeling loved. You know, my father was an alcoholic and my mother was a codependent, and she did the best job that she could. But I still remember growing up not really feeling loved. And at an early age, I remember seeking outside of my household unit to try to get the love that I didn't find in my nuclear family. And I remember also the very first time that I experimented with marijuana. It was when I was 16 years old. My mother found out about it, and she was going to ban me for the whole summer. But my sisters told her, no, don't do that, because that's going to make her rebel. I could not believe it when my mother told me I was relieved from that punishment. So I promised that I would never touch marijuana again. And I stopped. But for those of y'all who are like me, you know, even though I stopped, I couldn't stay stopped because I didn't have a program. But I did stop for about 2 years. I picked it up again somewhere in my senior year in high school. And I took that marijuana and that alcohol with me all the way to college. Party and hardy, thinking that was the reason to be there in college, was to party hardy and also to just affirm the plans for my life. It just gave me 4 years to just, you know, basically, you know, mess around and not take any responsibility. I got either extremely good grades in college or either real bad grades because I'm an extremist, you know. And I remember many times studying for my test at the last minute and getting an A the next day. So I just really thought I had it going on. So I went all through high school and I went all through college and had never heard about crack cocaine. Never. Wasn't able to get in touch with the fact that I was a weed addict because I sold it successfully, or so I thought, for 10 years. And so there was no financial unmanageability. I was still functional, if you will. And so I wasn't able to get in touch with how things had taken control over my life at that point. But even before that, I want to talk about some pain that entered my life prior even to my picking up that crack. And this is something I don't share a whole lot, but it was revealed to me that I need to go ahead and share that today. And what happened was I was in my senior year in college, and there was a man who was really crazy about me, and I only liked him a little bit, but the crazier he became about me, the more I decided that I would like him. And eventually, in my senior year in college, I gave in to his whims and his desires, and for the first time ever, at the age of 21, I gave up my virginity and began dating this man and began sleeping with this man. And what happened was that I got pregnant, and I went and I told him that I got pregnant. I was very fearful. My self-esteem was critically low, and I had toyed around with the fact of having an abortion, but I loved my daughter so much already inside of me that even though I took a trip all the way up to New York, at the last minute, I said, no, I'm going to have this baby. He promised he would still be there for me. He promised that he would be a father, and the devastating thing about it is that my daughter is now 20 years old, and that promise has never come true. But what was even more devastating was not only did he stop dating me, but he began dating and later on married my best girlfriend. That hurt so bad. That pain was so devastating. And I took it real personal. And it took a long time over the years to share that with people because I thought it was because something was wrong with me. And I was grateful for over the, 15, 20 years, very little people asked me who her daddy was. You know, I remember writing poems. I remember going after this man, trying to get him to be a father, thinking if I laid with him one more time and had sex with him, then he would be a dad. And he would lay for the sex part, but he never showed up. If he was to walk up to my daughter right now, kick her in the butt, she still wouldn't know who he was. Never there for. Talking about daddy putting an egg in his shoe and beating it. That was the story. And it caused a whole lot of pain. And I took that pain with me into my later using. I needed to share that. But like I said, it wasn't until 28 until I met Cody. And then my whole life turned around. There was a guy who liked me, and he used to give me powder, and I would take that powder and give it to a guy that I liked. So one day I gave Doug the coke, and he was like, I don't want to snort it. And I was like, what you want to do with it? I'm so smart, been all through high school and all through college, and I never heard of freebasing. He said, I don't want to snort it. I was like, well, what you want to do with it? I don't want to snort it. So then he proceeded to give me a lesson in freebasing. I did not feel anything that night. You know why? Because years later, I found out that man had been handing me the empty pipe, smoking up all of my coke and handing me the empty pipe. And he was a man from Camden. So if you know anybody from Camden, you know New Jersey, you know how they are. But so that was how that happened. But what I want to share is that the minute crack came into my life, it knocked me to my knees, and I found myself powerless. I went to a rehab 14 years ago when I was 28 years old. And I learned more in that rehab in 28 days than I had learned in my whole 28 years of living. I cried a whole lot of tears when I was there because I was getting honest with myself for the first time ever. Because I grew up in that nuclear family where they taught me, don't talk, don't touch, don't feel, deny your truth, hold on to what you know to be a fact. So the reversal began happening in my life as I went to that rehab. I didn't stay clean when I went to that rehab. I began getting high like maybe the first day when I got out because I didn't tell them about the boyfriend that I had that was still drinking because I knew that they would suggest that I got rid of him and I wasn't willing to do that. I had just went to the rehab so that I could keep him. Well, things got worse and worse with him, and that was the reason that I came here to Maryland. A lot of people ask me, well, what brought you to Maryland? And I would say Trailways. They was like, no, for real. What brought you to Maryland? And for real, Trailways. You know, because I couldn't stand, and he lived in Camden, New Jersey, I couldn't stand not being with him anymore, with him only 15 or 20 minutes away. So a friend had told me about how I needed to come to Maryland because I could get paid closer to what I was worth with my skills. So I decided, 14 years ago to this date, to move to Maryland. And it was one of the best things that I did. Because although I didn't get clean immediately in Maryland, I was eventually able to get and stay clean. And I know for a fact that it was part of my God's plan to bring me out of Philly, because I know I would have died there, and to bring me here where I could get the help that I needed. Because also while I was in New Jersey, I was expecting some kind of support or help from the nuclear family that they just weren't equipped to give me. But it was something about being Merlin, once I finally could stop being so hard-headed, to receive some information that God began to put a new family in my life that I wasn't even expecting that could help me. Had I been in New Jersey and Philly, I would have been expecting some help from a source where it couldn't even come from. So like I said, I'm grateful. So I came here, and even though I got clean, I wasn't able to stay here because I wasn't able to let go of people, places, and things. And I'll never forget, I came over here and I left my daughter in New Jersey. And my mom was very instrumental in helping me with my daughter in the beginning. But then later on, I brought her here to Maryland. Then I sent my daughter back. I thought that I was doing the very best that I could do for my daughter, but it hurt her a lot. She probably would have rather been here with me, crack addict and all. But I didn't like my daughter seeing me like that. And I thought it would just be a little while before I would get it back together. My daughter wound up staying in Jersey for years and years on end. And during that period, there were many times when I didn't even call my daughter. Didn't even think enough to send a postcard because I was too ashamed. I remember calling up the house during the festivities, during Thanksgiving and Christmas, calling my mom's house, listening to all the noise in the background, but hanging up because I was too ashamed. I remember my daughter asking me years later, well, Mommy, why didn't you at least call? And I'm like, what was I going to do? Tell you that I freebased up your toys and your basketball that you wanted that year? Being really ashamed, and it hurt me so bad. That was one of the most painful things, in addition to the fact that her father never was a father to her, was the fact of the pain that it caused my daughter, you know, while I was in Maryland and she was in New Jersey. And there was a song out, I don't know how many of y'all remember, it was a song by DeBarge, it was called All Revealed in Time. And every time I would hear that song, I would relate it to my daughter. And it was like a pledge that I was spiritually making to my daughter, promising her that I was going to be there for her. You know, and even though that came true eventually, it took a long time for that dream to manifest. You know, and just, you know, a certain lyric that I really used to hang on to from that song, it went, "What can I do to make you feel secure? Remove all your doubts so that you'll know for sure that you're the apple of my eye. Fulfill you of my dreams. Time will show the value of just what you mean to me. You're more precious than silver, more precious than diamond rings or anything that I could give you. It wouldn't mean a thing if you didn't have my love beside you there to guide you through. But baby, don't you know I do? I know just how you feel, but this time, mom's for real. And the special love that's deep inside of us will all be revealed in time." Y'all remember that song by DeBarge? And every time I would hear that song, my whole body would just wrap with pain, and I would just cry tears after tear after tear, because I wanted so bad to be there for my daughter, but I was powerless. I was caught up in the grip, and I couldn't get there and be there for her what I needed to be, and she needed her mother. So I carried this pain with me through relationships. My daughter came back to Maryland finally when I had gotten clean back in 92. And at the time, I had a drunken boyfriend, talking about not being able to let go of people, places, and things. We decided we were going to get clean together, and we did. But at one point, he decided to walk to the left, and I decided to walk to the right, and I knew I had to make a choice. So I let him go, and I had successfully let him go, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and physically. How many of you know letting go is a four-part process? But my daughter ran away, and that scared me. And in the past, she had ran to his house. So although I didn't want to go back, I needed to go back to find out if that's where she was. And I went back. He said she wasn't there, but he would help me find her. And he also at that time told me he had cancer and he was going to die. Now, and I remember a year ago, his sister had cancer, and 4 months later, she was dead. And although I loved him, I knew I wasn't well enough to be there for him. But I thought I was well enough to come back in his life, tuck him in his grave, wait the 4 months out, and get on with my life. Because I didn't think that God would forgive me. Because y'all had told me never let him die alone. And I didn't think God would forgive me. So I went back, you know, with the thoughts of waiting the 4 months out, tucking him in his grave, and getting on with my life and my recovery. Well, family, the trip part is he never died. He never died. Still living to this day, drunk in South Carolina. But as a result, I relapsed. He was not the cause of my relapse, because when I went back, God revealed to me that the reason I relapsed was because I took his disease of cancer and made it a priority over my disease of addiction. And so that's what I want to talk about right now. And I want to talk about the recovery and what it entailed for me these years. When I came back in 96 and I knew that I would make it back, I knew that I absolutely had to make my recovery my priority no matter what. But the very first thing I had to do in order to make that happen, I had to learn how to love myself enough to stay clean. With my codependent nature, it was always so much more important about you, what you were doing. And I couldn't focus on me. And I would mask it, and I would call it being kind and helpful. But for real, it was just a real convenient defense mechanism to stop me from taking care of me. But I had to learn how to take care of me. And I find myself to this day in situations and circumstances, on a job, with people, in relationships, asking myself, hold up, Judith, what do you need to do to take care of yourself in this situation, and doing it so that I can get the progression that this recovery process offers me. Learning to let go of those not in recovery, that was hard for me. Because, again, when I got clean, I thought that God had sent me on this mission to save everybody. You know, so I ran around trying to, you know, want people to have what I had. But y'all told me no, because their get high message is stronger than your recovery message. And I had to let go, but it hurt. But I was eventually able to let go, because I know today that you cannot lead others to the light by going in the darkness with them. I got to stand right here with both feet firmly planted in the light, to prove that there is a brighter way. Now, I can stand on this side of the bridge, and I can beckon to you over on that side of the bridge saying, come on, there's light and there's love and there's healing here. But I can't go back over there to get you. I have to trust that maybe it's not your time. Getting some acceptance with letting go of people not in recovery. My mom passed when I had 2 years clean. I want to report to y'all that I didn't use. I want to report to y'all that I had a peace greater than I ever could have thought I had. Because God prepared me for my mom passing. He prepared me. And I had a praying mother. I had a mother who I was not always on the best terms with. But when my mother passed, we were best friends. I thank God for my mother. I thank God because when she passed, God had allowed me to be around for a couple years where she could see that her prayers were answered, where she could see that I was a daughter worth having. I thank God that he answered both me and my mother's prayers because I was the youngest, and my mom had been praying that God would restore her baby to health. And I have been praying, oh, God, please let my mother live a little longer so that she can see her baby has gotten stronger. And God did that for us. And he allowed us to mend and allowed us to heal. And so months before she passed, God began preparing. And when my disease told me all the reasons why I should be sad about her passing, God said, no. Think on these things. Think on these things that are good, these things that are lovely, these things that are honest, these things that are pure, these things that are of good report. Think on these things. And then think about all of the things that you can thank me for in reference to your mom's life and in her passing. And I was able to do that. I was able to think on the fact that we had restored our relationship and I had lived long enough to be there for her in her last days. I began to think on the fact that I'll see her when I get there. I began being able to think on the fact that my mother would no longer be in pain because she was in a lot of pain during the end. So I'm here to report to you today that not only did I not use when my mom passed away, the joy outweighed the sorrow. Because every time the pain would try to come up in my spirit, I would think on the goodness of God and I would think on the goodness of her life and her passing and all that she had ever meant to me, the way she had loved me, ways when I wasn't even able to receive it. And that joy would just come and infiltrate and just knock that sorrow right out. So the joy definitely outweighed the sorrow. And I'm grateful for that. I've learned so much. Each year has brought different steps and levels and layers to me. I told you first about the self-care that was necessary. Then I'll share with you just now about how I had to learn how to let go of those not in recovery. I also had to learn how to sit still in relationships. When I first began getting in relationships, I had no boundaries. Then I had weak boundaries. Today, I got me some firm boundaries. Today, this program has brought me to the point where my self-esteem has grown to the level that I can let go of relationships that are not healthy for me because I'm loving me today. Remember when y'all told me that y'all was going to love me until I could love myself? Well, thank you very much, because I needed that love. I needed you to love me before, you know, until I could love myself. I needed you to tolerate me. Still definitely need you to tolerate me today as I go through messing up and not doing things the way I think I should do them. I thank you because as a result of you loving me until I can get to the point of loving myself, I've got some self-love for me today. Being able in relationships to tell someone, look, I want a platonic relationship with you and a platonic relationship purely. And if you can't accept that, then I'm not interested. And meaning it. Being willing and ready and able to have more and receive more than something that's being offered to you. No longer being willing to be in the market for pain because I want a man who can really be a partner to me or no one at all. Nothing in between will do anymore. You're looking at somebody who came in here, and I would tell a man, take me, and you can bring crumbs, before he would even tell me what he was bringing to the table. Take me, and you can bring crumbs, because that was all I thought that I was worth. So to say that I settled for crumbs ain't the exact nature. The exact nature is that I invited the crumbs, expected the crumbs, and then I received the crumbs. That's the exact nature. That's the exact nature. Getting in touch with the fact today that I don't have to accept crumbs. And I'm not 100% there. But through the years of recovery, I've also learned that I can be gentle with myself as I go through this process. And if I can't let go absolutely, I can hang on loose. That there's going to be somebody in the room that's going through the same stuff that I'm going through. And they will support me and they will not judge me. And it's going to be all right. So learning how to make healthy choices for myself in relationships is something that is a growing process with me. My daughter, when she came back, she was 13. I got her back when I was only 6 months clean. I was clean on the outside, but very toxic on the inside. Didn't know how much pain she was in. My daughter went through a lot of changes. And in 1995, she burnt my house and went to jail at 13 years old. More devastation. Just a lot of pain. A lot of things going on in my life. But like I said, when I got clean in 96, I knew that if I put her before my God or before my program, I would lose it. So having to do the things that I needed to do. But I got to share with you what it's like today. Me and my daughter had got to such a point where we progressively kept getting better. But if you know the recovery process is a cycle, you'll go steps forward, then you'll go steps backwards. It's not a straight line. Do not expect a straight line. So we was going back. And this past Thanksgiving, me and my daughter were at a backward state, if you will. And I shared at the Baltimore Area Convention about how I was this close to losing my daughter. And it was very painful and it was very frightening because my daughter had made some choices for her life, some ways and decisions that she had made for her life that I was in total disagreement. And I didn't know how to love her and I didn't know how to still accept her. My need to be always right was interfering with me and my daughter's relationship. My inability to love my daughter unconditionally was interfering with our relationship. And I shared at the Baltimore Area Convention that I was this close to losing my daughter because we didn't even have Thanksgiving dinner together. And I couldn't understand that. And that hurt me because I could understand when I was using why we didn't have it together. But now here I am clean and well in the recovery process, but we had clashed heads because she was doing some things that I felt that I had to set a boundary. But how many of y'all know that love never really fails? Love never fails. I came so close, and my disease was working all kind of stuff with the committee in my head, telling me all the reasons why I needed to stand my grounds. But the God of my understanding said, no, go in the enemy's camp and get your daughter. I went back up in the enemy's camp, and I was able to say, give me back my joy, give me back my peace, and give me back my daughter. I'm taking her back. And I took her back. But the tools that I used to take her back was unconditional love. The tools were some acceptance. Able to say, baby, I don't agree with the choices that you've made in your life, but I want to let you know that I love you unconditionally. There is no way you can choose to be. There's nothing you can say or do that's going to stop me from being here for you 100%. And I took those tools of acceptance and unconditional love and non-judgment and went and snatched my baby back. And we're getting closer and closer every day. I had a 43rd birthday on Good Friday. And my daughter gave me a birthday card. She gave me the best birthday card I ever, ever, ever had. And I still call her my baby, but she's 20 years old. My baby has grown up. She has grown up because she owning some stuff, y'all. She is owning. It's no longer about the crack addict mom who abused the poor little innocent girl. She owns some stuff. She said, Mother, the card said, Mother, if I knew what I knew then about how much you love me, and about the choices that you made that were in my best interest, maybe I would have acted better. If I'd known what I did then, maybe I wouldn't have said all the mean or nasty things to you. Maybe I would have known how hard it is to let go when you love somebody and let them go through their path. She said, I'm sorry for all of that, and I cannot change the past. But I can let you know today that I love you. I love the way you've always been here for me. I love your kindness. I love the way you've always been caring for me. I love you very much, and I'm glad you're my mom. Happy birthday. And that made my day. I was like, oh, you can go home now. You know, it was just, that was just so powerful for me. The way that the transformation, and it's as a direct result of recovery. I also have to share about how I have grown in the area of overcoming my fear. You know, I've been able to intellectualize the fact that fear is false evidence appearing real. But until it gets down in my heart, until I register that message deep down in my heart, it can't dictate my actions. So although I knew in my head that fear is false evidence appearing real, I used to bow to my fear. Fear was sovereign in my life, but not anymore. Because you see, I just recently did a fifth step with a new sponsor that I have. And not only did I get a chance to purge the next layer of stuff that comes up, because each time you do a step, a fourth and a fifth step, more layers of junk come up. And so much stuff came up, and she immediately put me right into the sixth step, talking about being willing to have God remove all of the defects of character. And I was able to get in touch with the fear. And I was able to say, ain't nothing going to happen to me if I let go. Who is man that he can hurt me as long as I'm a follower of good? Being willing to let go of the fear and go through it, and letting go of relationships, and being able to tap into the talents and the gifts that God has given me. He's given me so many talents and so many gifts. And I wasn't so much afraid of being successful. I mean, I wasn't afraid of failing. I was afraid of being successful, still deep down not feeling worthy enough to have the best that I could have. But I'm telling you, I reached another plateau a couple of weeks ago where I'm able to meet that fear head on and being willing to go out and reach out and touch and do the things that I need to do. Recovery is great. I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. And the good thing about this step six, when you are entirely ready to have God remove all your defects of character, and then the seventh step, when you humbly ask him to remove your shortcomings, meaning you can't do it, is that he don't just take the junk out. He has the love and the audacity, if you will, to put some stuff in its place. He's taken out my fear, and he's putting some faith in its place. He's taken out that selfishness, that self-centeredness, thinking everything's about me, and putting some pure selflessness in its place. Taking out the pride and putting in some humility. Taking out the low self-worth and giving me a healthy sense of worth, a God esteem. Taking out the laziness and the slothfulness and giving me some discipline and diligence so I can be about his business. Taking out the old stuff that he could no longer use and replacing it with the things that he wants to use, because the reason he brought me back from the dead wasn't about me. It was about doing something for him. I thank God for loving me so much that he's not going to leave me the way I am. I thank God for refusing to build a firm foundation on some shaky ground. So when some stuff come up that I thought had already disappeared, I get real grateful because I know that God is revealing it because he intends to heal it. You're looking at somebody who never thought she was going to make it. Many years ripping and running, going to get high parties where they told me I had to be able to smoke at least a half ounce or I couldn't come in. You're looking at somebody who thought she was going to die a practicing addict. Matter of fact, I was dead. I was mentally, emotionally, and spiritually dead. Dead. But too trifling to lay down. Wanting to take my own life. But you know, my sick addict thinking told me, no, you don't want to take your life. Because if you take your life, girl, it's going to be just your luck that minutes after you're dead, there'll be a knock on your door. And there'll be somebody coming over with some stuff, and you're going to miss a big high. Oh my God. That was why I thought I didn't want to take my own life. But for real, it was because God had a perfect plan and will for me. So I got to trust him with every phase of my life. I got to trust that the same God who brought me back out of the deepest despairs of crack cocaine addiction is able to see me through any situation that I could go through today. I got to believe that. And I got to walk with the faith that this program has taught me, because I am fortified with God's power. I'm fortified with the faith that the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Narcotics Anonymous has taught me. And y'all told me I could be vigilant. Y'all told me I could go back some places and take back stuff that rightfully belongs to me. And I'm just so grateful that I serve a God today who is a restoring God, who will more than replace anything that my disease has taken away from me. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you. Now I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Tony.
I'm an addict. My name is Tony. And I'm nervous. Let me get that out of the way. Thank you for sharing with us. I got a lot out of what you shared, and I identified a lot. I believe the only difference between you and I is gender. I really believe that. I really do. My clean date is May the 29th, 1992. And it's but for the grace of God I'm here. And a lot of willingness, a lot of going to meetings, and a lot of working with a lot of addicts that keep me clean a day at a time. And prayer. I can't leave that out. I cannot leave that out. That is something that is prevalent in my life. I mean, without that, where would I be? I need to say that. My first convention of Narcotics Anonymous the person that was standing at the podium in the big room, her name was Tina H. And when I heard that message, the first thing that came to my mind was, God, how could you do so many bad things like that? In other words, I'm saying I identified out. You know, and I also said after some time had passed that, God, you know, I'm starting to identify with a lot of things that people, addicts in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, are sharing with me and with us. And it started becoming real to me that this is where I belong. I tried so many different things, but I kept using. And when I tried this, I stopped using. And I also thought to myself when the speaker was speaking was that I wonder if I could ever do what she's doing. I wonder if I'd ever be able to speak at a convention. And I sold myself short. I said, no, I probably couldn't. But God had another plan, like he always does. And I find myself, in fact, the person that asked me if I would speak today walked up to me and had never said anything to me before since I've been in recovery until that day. Well, they may have said, hey, how you doing? But to hold a long conversation, it just didn't happen. But I guess because me going to a lot of meetings, me sharing with a lot of addicts, and me just trying to be of maximum service to God and the people about me, this guy asked me, he said, do you mind doing a workshop at the convention this year? And I said, I don't know if I can do that. So it looked like he was getting ready to walk away. I said, I think I can do it. I said, yeah, I think I can do it. What's the topic? And he told me what it was, and I said, good. So I checked with some people before I came in here today, and I told them what I was going to do. And I told them all of this stuff that I had in my head. When you tell an addict that, you better be ready for what's going to come back to you. And out of all the people that I told that, every last one of them said, Tony, for God's sake, keep it simple. Tell your story. That way you don't have to use no whole lot of big words, because I can mess them up just trying to be cool or fit in. So that's what I'm going to do. And matter of fact, I'm glad that my watch was taken so I won't have to know how much time I have, because I can really get into some stuff. But anyway, I'm a crackhead from Southeast Washington, D.C. And just before the meeting started, I know that there's one person in here. Well, now I just saw two. But I know one person, two people in here, knows the area of Eastgate, Lincoln Heights, Benning Park, Semple City. All of that is on the corridor of East Capitol Street and Central Avenue. And I live right in the middle, so when I walked out of my door, I could go to either one of four or five places, right? And that's what I did. I grew up in that area. I shot ball in that area. I did a whole lot of stuff in that area. And I thank God that I'm here. Because by right, I should not be here. But by grace, I am. That undeserved favor. I'm standing here before my fellow addicts today because I think sometimes, and I'm going to tell you where my head can go sometimes, I thought that when I was asked to do this, that I was doing y'all a favor. But God did me a favor by asking me, because whenever I share with other addicts, I share my experience, strength, and hope, looking for some help. I don't have a whole lot of knowledge, you know. Don't have a whole lot of information. But what I do have is my life back. And that's what I want to pass on to the new person. Give yourself a chance. Because this is a good life. So all the crack that I smoked, I mean, I'm talking about I smoked, my chest hurt. You know. And I thought I would relieve the pain by saying, I'm going to wait till the pipe cool off. And try to hit it anyway. Pipe hot and everything. Chest hurt. But that's what I did. And I did that in a lot of areas, and I got a lot of pain just using. Thought I was killing the pain. I was intensifying it. You understand? But I didn't stop because I didn't think that I had to. The message of Narcotics Anonymous was not in my mind when I was smoking. The message was, let's do this again. Let's get one more. Just one more. That's really all that you need, one more. And that one more going to do it. Well, every last one that I hit was the last one. This is it. I'm tired. You know, I don't want to do this anymore until that one was gone. Well, I might do one more. Yeah, yeah, the insanity. Yes, ma'am, that's what it was. Doing the same thing, expecting a different result. So I did this for a lot of years, along with some other chemicals. And I really, really did not believe that my life was that bad. I just really thought that if people would just leave me alone and let me live my life the way it was designed, that's crazy, then my life would be okay, you know. There's nothing wrong with me. You got the problem. I don't have a problem because I'm all right with what I'm doing. And I was killing myself, and people saw it. But I just didn't want to accept the fact that I had a problem. Whenever I went and got high, I couldn't stop. No matter how many times I told myself, now listen, I told me, I'm sponsoring myself while I'm getting high. I don't have a problem. I can stop anytime I want to. And I ended up stopping in 1992 by the help of two young boys. The kingpin. These two young boys told me after I had beat them out of a 20. And I wanted you all to believe that I had all this cocaine all up and down the East Coast. It was 120. 120, that was it. And it took so much for me to tell y'all that it was 120. After telling y'all that I had all this coke and all this dope. Crazy, just wanting to fit in. But this young boy told me when I was standing in this bathroom, in this crack house, and I'm not going to say it the way he said it because this is a tape, and I'm sure everybody in here is going to buy two copies. Send them to your family and friends. He said to me, he said, Dad, now that was the first mistake he made. Because I was 33 and he was like 16 or 17. Dad, you got something belong to me. And I said, no, I don't know what you're talking about. He said, you owe us $20. You smoked a 20. And I said, well, who told you that? And he called the guy's name out. I won't call his name out because he might get a copy of this tape. But let me tell you something. My whole game was shot. Now I've been caught. I've been seen. I've been found out. But I was scared to death in that bathroom. Because there was two in there, and they both had pistols. He looked at me, and he said, in a real nasty way, and I'm going to say it in a clean way, I should kill you. Now, by this time, I'm probably working on my 1,500th or 15,000th prayer. God, if you get me out of this one, I will never do this again. Yeah, that's. And I'm sure God was sitting somewhere, heaven or wherever he was sitting, tired. Because I was. I'm sure he was probably saying, here we go again. But you know what? It was just a matter of seconds, maybe a couple of minutes. I mean, things were going so fast that the other young dude looked at me and said, all right. He called me all kind of names. It's not on my birth certificate. And he said, I don't ever want to see you in here again. He didn't say today or tomorrow. He said, ever again. And you know what? I'm here to report that that was the first suggestion that I took on my way to Narcotics Anonymous. Because I had turned around. Now, this bathroom door was shut. I turned around and proceeded to leave and did not open the door. Walked straight into the door. That's how scared I was. I'm talking about being scared. Big old guy like me thinking that he had it going on. I got two youngsters in there and it got me pinned up. And I don't know what to do except pray. And I opened the door and I left. And the people that were sitting out there in the living room, I didn't speak. Told them I ain't said nothing. I rolled. I got on out of there. And I left, and this was the longest walk home that I had ever experienced. No money, just got shook up by two young boys. They told me not to come back around there, so I couldn't go back around there. But you know what, y'all? It didn't stop there. I knew some other places where I could go. The insanity just keeps going. And I went home. Well, I went to this place where I was sleeping. It was my mother's house. And I sat down on the edge of this bed that looked like it was a bed, but it was a mess. And the thought that came to my mind was, where can I get 10 more dollars so I can go get me one more piece? It's always, remember, it's always one more. Just one more. And by this time, I guess the second part of the prayer when I had asked God to help me had become real. My mother got up and intervened. God must have tapped him. Said, look, get up and go in and check on that boy. He can do something stupid again. And she got up and walked in the room, and I'm sitting there on the edge of the bed with the clothes that I had on from the day before after I had gotten off work. And I'm sitting there, and I'm hurting. I'm scared. I mean, the youngsters, they took my highs. I'm not even high anymore. Right? And she said, look at you. You are a mess. And I couldn't do nothing but put my head down and just shake my head and agree with her that I was a mess. My life was at an end, and I didn't know it, but she did. God knew it, and he touched her. She came in, but she gave me an ultimatum, and she said to me, you're going to either go get yourself some help, or you're going to get out of my house. And she didn't say that in a nice way. She called me all kind of names, too. That's not on my birth certificate. And that's the kind of stuff that I deserved, I believe, because it's the type of things that I was doing. But these people were telling me these things because they loved me, I believe. Just didn't love myself. I was killing myself. So what I did was I sat down on the edge of bed and I started crying. And I said, Mom, you got to help me because I want to go out and use again. And she said, well, lay you behind down. We'll get up in the morning and we'll get yourself some help. She called the EAP counselor on her job. They in turn called a place and got me a bed. And that was the end of my life in using and a new beginning in my life being clean in Narcotics Anonymous. Now, I didn't know it then because I figured, you know, maybe I can just go and get cleaned up a little bit and learn how to get high safely. sponsoring myself, y'all. But when I got here, this was the best thing that ever happened. This was the place that I needed to be because I met a lot of people. And you all accepted me for who I was, because you all knew who I was when I got there. I wanted to think that y'all didn't, but you did. You accepted me. You didn't give up on me. And you told me to keep coming back. See, now this was brand new to me because folk wasn't telling me, come on back. You know, just telling me, look, don't you come back around here. Ever. If I see you, then whatever you get, you deserve it. I'm like, damn, I got to find somewhere else to go now. You know, but y'all told me to keep coming back. Y'all hugged me. Y'all saw me with this look on my face. And you loved me anyway. Because basically, the look was that I was scared. I wanted y'all to think that I was this hard guy, you know, my call up, you know. And y'all just looked past all of that. You looked past my faults and you looked at my needs. And you helped me. And that was almost 9 years ago. And I have not looked back. Now, I still have moments where I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do whatever task is set in front of me to do. But the moment that I say a prayer and ask God to do for me what I cannot do for myself, here it comes. Help comes. People come to me. Folk that I don't even know. Never ever seen in my life. That's how God has worked in my life. Now, I had asked a question one day, you know, and I'm sure I'm probably on the attic in here that's asked the question. This question was, will I ever be able to at least smoke a joint of weed? Or drink a beer or something, yeah. You know, because alcohol is a drug. And immediately God said, no! I said, here we go. Well, I guess I got to go to a meeting. And I've asked myself that question more than once. Need to be honest about that. Really need to be honest about that. Because I've been going to meetings and because I have a couple of people that I sponsor and because I read the literature and because I pray and because I do other things to enhance and enlarge my spiritual life does not stop the addict mind from ticking. Because I believe my disease wants me dead. By any means necessary, it will send me a person, a situation, or a thing. And it'll make it look good to me. Make it look like a drug. And set it right in front of me. And give me a choice. Do you want this? Because it's, you know. And sometimes the choices that I make are not good ones. But again, I thank God for the God that I found in these rooms. I thank God for it. today I'm, and you had mentioned something about a song. You know, I kind of laughed because I had this song in my head when I was using, and I used to sing this song. In fact, I'd be high walking up the street. And this song, for those who are my age or maybe older, if you remember it, then you'll identify. But the name of the group was Sir Joe and the Free Souls. I got so much trouble on my mind. That was the name of the song. And it used to jam. And I used to walk along and sing it on my way to cock. I got so much trouble on my mind. Crazy as a bat. I mean, be dancing to the song, too. On my way. They probably thought that I'd already used, but I was happy. I was on my way to get on. Yes, sir. And then once I got on, that song never entered my mind. I didn't sing it. I just sat there waiting for the next one, you know. But there's a song that I keep in my head today, and I try to keep religion and spirituality separate. But this song is by a gospel singer. Her name is Helen Baylor. And this song that I have in my head a lot of times is, God is an awesome God. Because anytime an addict like myself can go a whole day without using crack cocaine or heroin or weed or anything, it's got to be a power that I call by name today, and I call him God. Because we were riding down here, and I was talking to the guy that was riding with me, and I don't try to change the program or none of that. Don't want to do that because it's been working way before I got here. But with me, when you talk about a power greater than myself, for me, alcohol was a power greater than me. Drugs was a power greater than me. Shopping is a power greater than me. Sex is a power greater than me. There's a lot of powers greater than me, but I need to call the power by name. God. Good orderly direction. A group of druggies. I got to call it by name. Because when I come in here, y'all, I feel safe. I don't care what your background is, who you knew, who you cop from. It doesn't matter to me. The fact of the matter is that if you got a problem, like I got a problem, and we come together and talk about this problem, eventually we're going to come to a solution. Eventually. It might be tomorrow. We keep talking. We're going to come up with this. And you know what? We do. I got friends right in this room that I see a lot when I'm home. And there's a couple of people in here that I go to meetings with. And they see me and I see them. And sometimes I may be a little standoffish because I may be experiencing some things that I just don't want to go at right then and there. And I know, I really believe in my heart that these people see me when I go through this and they pray. God help that boy there. That's a real simple prayer. When I see folk going through things, that's what I do. God, look, help them. If I go over there and try and help them, they'll be mad at me. So just help them, you know. And those are the things that some of the things that I've experienced since being here, the time that I've been here. And I've had a lot of experiences. I've had deaths in my family. You know, I've had problems on the job and all of that stuff. But you know what? I didn't use, and that is really not my problem. The job is not my problem. The relationship is not my problem. The dog ain't my problem. The next door neighbor ain't my problem. The problem is right in here. How I react to things. My reaction has gotten so much better today than it was yesterday. You know, because I can react to the smallest little things. And if you saw me, sometimes when I react, probably would ask a question like, how much time did he say he had? He said he wasn't doing what? But what you see in here is what you will see out there. I try to be the same person all the time. That's what y'all taught me. I can be myself. I can be who I am. And I was talking to somebody before we came upstairs here, and I told them how I experienced fear of not knowing what's going to happen next. And really, that ain't none of my business, but I still think it anyway. You know, or the fear of not being able to succeed in certain areas or whatever. But when you all see me, I try to present myself as a man that's really got it going on. And there are times when I really don't have it going on, but God still does. Because he keeps me, you know, in on the path. And I tell you something, with stuff like that, I would be a real crazy man to go out here and use. Although sometimes a joint of weed, and I'm not promoting this, I'm just saying with me, sometimes a joint of weed is a good idea. Sometimes I hit a, because it's an easy way out. It's what I'm used to doing. It really is. But all of y'all, whether you're from Philly, New York, or Alaska, if I hear you share, if I see you in a meeting and you part of the evidence that God is really doing what I can't do for me, then a lot of times that thought just, all y'all in my head, somebody will say something to me like, you don't have to use if you don't want to. Where did that come from? Yeah, you know. Or the first one is the one that's going to get you in trouble. I mean, I hear all kinds of stuff. And usually I'll, you know, call somebody or pray or do something. Because I'm understanding more and more each day that I cannot do this alone. I need y'all. Thank you. I need y'all. I really do. So if you're new, and if you have any kind of doubts that this program will or will not work, whatever you think, just keep coming. Just keep coming. Because it has worked in my life for the time that I've been here. And I really, really, in the bottom of my heart and in the back of my mind, I really, really believe that it'll keep working. Because if God has kept me clean this long, then I heard our first speaker say it, then he will take care of any other problem that I have. But I got to do some work. I got to incorporate the steps in my life. I got to keep working with other addicts, whether I want to or not, whether I like them or not. That doesn't matter, because it's not about me. It's about the next person, you know. And I try to do that to the best of my ability. And a lot of times, I do it, because I have to add some humor to it. I walk around sometimes real serious, you know, because I try to take on some things, and it really ain't that serious. It really isn't, you know. But this program has done so much for me. You know, it has done so much for me. And I want to thank God. I want to thank Narcotics Anonymous for allowing an addict like me to stand here today to give the message of hope. And I'll keep coming back. Thank you.
We seem to have a little bit of time left. So before we open up the meeting to those who would like to share, please remember to come up to the microphone one at a time. Also try to keep in mind that there are other addicts who are waiting to share. If you don't want to be recorded, please inform the person taping so that they can turn off the recorder while you share. Is there anybody want to come up? Well, if there is no one that want to come up, we can close the meeting. Would somebody please just read just for today? It's right here.
My name is Reno. I'm an addict. Just for today, tell yourself, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow this way, I have nothing to fear.
Just for today. I'd like to thank Judith and